This call may be recorded for quality and artificial intelligence training purposes. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. Before ChatGPT took the world by storm, wowing users with its prose writing prowess, most people knew chatbots as those annoying pop-ups on websites that offered basic and not always useful customer support. Even before chatbots could pass the LSAT, customer service was moving toward greater automation, often in an effort to cut costs. Human customer service agents are an expensive and finite resource, causing those long, USAC-filled waits and limited hours to take calls. So will the current AI boom push humans even further out of the customer support game? Not so fast, says Christina McAllister. She's a senior analyst at Forrester who works on customer service research and strategy.
In recent years, we've heard like Frontier Airlines, for example, had very famously announced that they were cutting all of their phone support out and a number of things like that. And it's very tricky to do that when you don't really have, frankly, the AI capabilities today for chatbots and that kind of thing just really aren't advanced enough to be able to have meaningful conversations. ChatGPT and all of these announcements they're getting there. I mean, like, we're getting closer, but we at Forrester don't recommend anyone use those capabilities for consumer-facing use cases because it's just too risky right now.
Tell me more about that. Why would you not recommend using these new tools which have made such a splash, ChatGPT among them?
I mean, like, I like using ChatGPT. I'm one of the people who likes playing around with it for sure. And there's a lot of value there. But right now, the value should be for augmenting your internal employee audience, because the risk of these, what I'll say, large language models, generative models like ChatGPT and similar, they make things up. A lot of us at Forrester were playing around to see, okay, you know, who of us does ChatGPT know about? And for many of my colleagues, it would just invent their educational background. They went to school for, you know, biophysics. And it's like, no, they did not. This is obviously an open area of research. We're still, like, new things are happening all the time. And I know that there are a lot of companies that are really focused on solving this problem. But at least as of today, there's no safe option for enterprises basically to control what it is that a generative model says. If it's based on a large language model, there are some ways you can put a bit of boundaries around it, but it's still a little too early in the development life cycle for the products that an enterprise would buy to really shape this up in a way that would be safe for external audiences, so that you don't want to end up being like the company that is being used for the next 10 years as the example of a chatbot gone rogue.
Now, what about emotion recognition AI? How is that being implemented?
Yeah, so this is something that is more common, like an analytics software. It's kind of used in two ways, both to categorize a number of the customer's emotions in their post-contact analytics. So if I wanted to review all the calls that were about billing and I wanted to understand what my customers felt about the issues that they had with billing, for example, then what is called commonly like sentiment analysis, but emotion analysis is a little bit deeper. You kind of like step into a bit more of like emotional categorization versus just positive, negative, or neutral. But then there's the other side of it is for agent-facing guidance when the machine detects emotion of some kind to be able to help the agent navigate that conversation. It's imperfect, though.
How does that work? What does it do? If it detects someone is, you know, frustrated or emotional, what happens?
The most common example, actually, is something that basically the prompt would show up as like a real-time cue or like a tip kind of thing, like a notification of some kind for the agent. And it would say something like, your customer is frustrated, show empathy. But of course, the agent knows that. If the machine knows that, good chance the agent knows that. And the agent is usually pretty neutral because that's their job. Their job is to, you know, solve customers' problems. So in real time, my clients have basically stated that, like, they don't see a lot of value in detecting and kind of like surfacing the emotion of the customer to the agent, because it just doesn't necessarily you know, change the course. And a lot of the times it's pretty inaccurate, but most often it's based on something like tonality, where you're able to say, okay, this person has a more agitated tone of voice, or they're more elevated in their pace of speech, or their the loudness of their voice and things like that. But some people are just loud speakers, and some people are really animated speakers, and some cultures actually don't represent emotions in the same way. Some cultures, when they get really quiet when they're mad, or neurodivergence, where you don't necessarily have the same representation of emotion if you communicate as an autistic person or as someone with neurological difference. So it's challenging to use those buckets to make meaningful decisions, because it is not necessarily as nuanced as it needs to be.
Why are human agents still so important to this kind of work?
One of the most meaningful drivers of customer experience quality is the engagement between the customer and the agent. So it's meaningful because your customers, basically, there's three things that customers care about. Did the agent answer all of my questions? So the first time I called you, did it get resolved effectively? And is the agent empowered to resolve issues without escalating to their supervisors? And again, they only call in maybe 2 to 3 times a year, but their experience in that moment is so impactful from a customer experience perspective, and in turn, you know, from a revenue perspective, because customer experience is aligned with, you know, like higher revenue. To not invest in the agent is frankly a bad business decision, especially with companies that pride themselves on having good customer experience.
Christina McAllister is a senior analyst at Forrester. We've got more from Christina on the future of AI and customer service at our website, marketplacetech.org. Late last year, after ChatGPT became available, but before its more powerful successor, GPT-4, came out, Christina and multiple colleagues at Forrester posted an article warning businesses about moving too fast to integrate this tech into operations because of these tools' tendency to hallucinate, or as they called it in the article, generate coherent nonsense, something that's probably not great in a customer service context. Another ethical dilemma came up in a piece published by Harvard Business Review by several technologists at the professional service firm Accenture. They point out conversational AI can be very persuasive, and without the moral compunctions of a human customer service representative, could easily manipulate customers into just buying more stuff they can't afford. Jesus Alvarado produced this episode. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.